And it's great to welcome back to Sunday Night for the first time this year, Father Richard Leonard.
Happy New Year, John, and to all our listeners as well.
And indeed to you. And over Christmas, we've had a surfeit of good films. Very hard to know what to choose.
We're lucky that our summer coincides with award season in the Northern Hemisphere. Not just the Oscars and the Golden Globes, but a few other very significant, like the Berlin Film Festival and a few others are happening in Europe in the first part of the year. So we tend to get excellent films when we have the time to watch them. And that's certainly been true this year.
Yeah. And this year you've had the big ones like Star Wars, but you've also had some fairly serious films dealing with ethical issues. I mean, you could take the great institutions of our society, politics, the church, business. They're all there. We could talk about three of them on the way through. Spotlight, Truth, The Big Short. Let's begin with Spotlight.
I don't know whether we've got an institution who is left unexamined over this summer, and very seriously examined. This is not frivolous. These are very serious films, and they've all said very different things about these institutions, though there are common themes that go through it. But I think for my money, and obviously because I've got more of an investment in it, I'd like to talk about Spotlight first. Spotlight's an extraordinary film. I wrote a review recently where I said that I think it's probably the angriest film I've ever seen, because in that best sense of the biblical sense of justified anger, that where something is so wrong and earth just cries out for justice to be visited upon it. This is the story, of course, of the Boston Globe exposing the child sexual abuse scandal in the Boston Catholic Archdiocese. They start their investigation in 1999 and end up publishing from, I think it's August of 2002, and the last of the 13 articles was in early December 2002, and Cardinal Bernard Law has to resign, or does resign, some 2 weeks later.
And takes up residence in Rome,
yes,
where he still abides.
Which has been very controversial. There are some people who claim he can't come back to the United States of America, that he would be arrested for the covering up of these crimes. I don't know the truth of that. I'd be surprised, actually, if Bernard Law hasn't returned to the United States, but I don't know one way or the other. But it was a bad look, I thought, for the church, and I didn't think it was the best decision that St. Pope John Paul II took at the time, and subsequently he was given a job in the Vatican and given to be made an archpriest of the Basilica of St. Mary Major, which is rather just a ceremonial role. But having said that, it just looked bad that he'd gone through this terrible chapter and presided over it in Boston and then was brought to the Rome. So I think this whole chapter, no one comes out of this well, and we know it, of course, here in Australia. So pointing the finger at the United States or the Vatican is no comfort to the Australian Catholic Church.
Even though typically the Americans keep this story as an American story, they still at the end do list other places where it's
That's
happened.
That's true, and it's quite a list. Yes. And a few Australian places are certainly in that final list that come in what's called a roll-up at the end of the film. And through we go, where serious sexual abuse allegations and convictions have been in fact affected. One of my criticisms of the film, it's not a perfect film, but it's a very, very good film. One of the criticisms of it is, from seeing this film and, in fact, this investigation, you'd swear the Americans were the first in. But, in fact, the Canadians, God bless them, were the first really in the 70s and then in the 80s to start to really have a look at clergy sexual abuse. Then it went to England and Ireland, came to Australia. But it really was this Boston Globe investigation that saw an extraordinarily systematic attention to what are the issues involved and what's actually happened.
Let's talk about the film itself then. You mentioned the word anger. And I think one of the striking characteristics of the film is how low-key it is. And there's only one outstanding moment of anger in the whole film where you sort of reach out and say, yes, 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 yourself.
Yes, Mark Ruffalo has a fantastic speech. In fact, he has two great speeches, but one's angrier than the other. And where it looks as though they're not going to publish and they might be beaten to it, and also because they could lose the story, he really has a go at the head of the Spotlight team, who's Michael Keaton, and has a great speech about how they all grew up as Catholic kids. That's the interesting thing about this, is that it would appear that the four main people on the Spotlight investigative journalist team all have something to do with Catholicism in Boston. And that becomes one of the complex things in this story, is that everybody's enmeshed in it, including the newspaper.
Well, indeed, the Boston Globe itself is literally across the street from a school where one of the offences occurred.
Yes, that's a very disconcerting. I wasn't ready for that. As a Jesuit, one of the cases that they start to investigate when they're doing their investigative process is a case of a Jesuit priest at Boston College High. It's just generally called BC High, Boston College High, and it is directly across the road from the Boston Globe. And Michael Keaton's character went to that school, and he can't believe that there are allegations against this priest, whom he had great love and affection for at school. So he personally starts to investigate it, personally meets with victims, and then goes and confronts the administrators of the school. I've got to say that it's one thing to talk about the church. It's when you belong to a religious order, as I do in the Catholic Church, and all of a sudden they're talking about us and a school I know and I've been to. I had two reactions. The first was, you know, it becomes very confronting. So no one, including me, we're not off the hook, and we have to own our complicity in this criminal dysfunction. And secondly, that you have to, the funny thing is the Boston Globe, some of their story was across the street for decades and decades, and they wouldn't and couldn't see it. That's one of the better things about this film. It's sophisticated. The script is very well crafted, because the Boston Globe, in fact, there were people going to the Boston Globe as early as 1976 who tell them about sexual abuse issues in the Catholic Church in Boston. And there's whole files on it they discovered in their archives, to which editors or journalists or editors-in-chief just hadn't either put together, or they were too enmeshed with the local story themselves.
Or so they'd give it a little piece in the Metro page.
Yes, they didn't take it seriously, and they couldn't start to put the dots together. Actually, I think it's a rather sophisticated way of saying that that's what's happened all around the world, really, that starting to see the sexual abuse issue, which is primarily in the family home, also across every institution in this country anyway. It's a rare institution that has dealings with children, religious or otherwise, that don't have cases before the Royal Commission into institutional sexual abuse, that people didn't join the dots, including people in the institution. So here's a journalist, an outstanding American newspaper, who hadn't joined up the dots either and wanted to think it was a series of rather criminal and sick individuals rather than something as systematic as we now know it to be.
And that line comes through the film, look for the institution.
Yes. There's one great moment in it where the editor, there's an editor-in-chief who's a Jewish guy who comes in, I think from Miami, if my memory serves me correctly, to become the editor-in-chief of the Boston Globe. And he's the one who starts to look at this question with a different set of eyes. And much is made in the film of him being Jewish, and all the sort of latent anti-Semitism is there, that he would be attacking the great institutions of Boston because he's not one of us. Well, of course, his journalistic instincts were absolutely right. And secondly, then everybody else seems to have a stake in the story. And so all the institutions of Boston want to protect the Catholic Church, and they come together to try to do so, from the legal fraternity, from the business community, from the educational. The only crowd who are surprisingly missing from this narrative, except for one small scene at the beginning, are the police. And my hunch is, given what I know about the Boston Irish Catholic police, maybe there's a whole film in that story all on its own.
Let's talk for a bit about the production design and the direction of the film. Very low key.
Very low key. It's flat. And it's meant to be that way. I assume the director, Tom McCarthy, has chosen to go that way for two reasons. Firstly, you keep it flat and low key when you want it as realistic as possible. And when you've got it, when you've got a script that doesn't need a lot of gimmicks to be dramatic, the story's already dramatic. So it's quite flat in its production values, but that's only to affect it.
And that's a strength rather than a weakness.
In this case. And secondly, it doesn't let the film get in the road of the actual stories. Yes. Stanley Tucci plays a fantastic role here of a very angry Armenian-born American lawyer who is the only person that appears in town who for 20 years has been trying to fight the Catholic Church.
And thought of as a bit of a maddie.
Yeah, and he says at one stage, you know, you can't record a single thing because he's been done over so many times and he's lost so many cases and he's so angry. Well, he's an extraordinary guy. So he's compelling, and he's the one who lets the spotlight team have access to some of his clients. And they're just very powerful, and they're taken from actual transcripts from the interviews that the journalists actually had. So the production design and the cinematography is not gimmicky. It's fairly flat. But it's intense, and the intensity goes all the way through to the end with this film. It's a stunning film, but it's a very, for Catholics anyway, it's an extremely difficult film to watch. I had a mixture of feelings at the end of it, profound anger and profound grief. But I've told my fellow Catholics in Catholic and the reviews I've done for the Catholic press that this we owe it to victims and to survivors and to their families to go and see this film.
I know there's things you cannot tell me. But I also know there's a story here, and I think everybody will hear about it.
Do you think your paper has the resources to take that on?
I do. Do you?
The Boston priests molested kids in six different parishes over the last 30 years. The church found out about it and did nothing. We haven't committed any long-term investigative resources to the case.
No, we haven't.
And that's the kind of thing your team would do.
Spotlight?
Guys, listen. Everybody's going to be interested in this.
Obviously, the church will fight us very hard.
I'm trying to get some background information.
I don't want you recording this in any way, shape, or form. Nothing.
We understand you've settled several cases against the church.
I can't discuss that.
There aren't any records of any of these settlements.
Nope.
When you're a poor kid from a poor family, and when a priest pays attention to you, it's a big deal. How do you say no to God?
Spotlight.
Just the tip line.
You think he's got something?
I want to keep digging.
We need to focus on the institution. Show me that it came from the top down.
They'll try to silence anyone who speaks out.
You leave me alone, you hear me, goddammit?
6% act out sexually.
6% is 90.
90 priests.
If there were 90 of these bastards, people would know.
Maybe they do.
They control everything.
This is not just Boston. It's a whole country. It's a whole world.
They knew! And they let it happen. It could have been you. It could have been me. It could have been any of us.
The other main thread in this film is, of course, the role and place of the media in our society, which is also the main theme of the other film, or one of the other films we're mentioning, Truth. Cate Blanchett, fabulous role
as a
TV producer who just gets hammered for what she discovers.
I'm a great fan of, I'm an unabashed fan of Cate Blanchett's. I turn up to watch Kate open an envelope. I just think what she brings to every role is just extraordinary. Curiously, she's got two big roles out at the moment. One is Carol, and the other is Truth. Interestingly, and maybe predictably, I liked Truth a lot more than I liked Carol. I didn't quite find the love story in Carol believable, way apart from it being a lesbian love story, a gay love story. Apart from that, I just didn't find it a very believable story. But in Truth, oh, she delivers a knockout performance. It got heavily criticized in the States for being too verbal, being too wordy, but I have no idea how you would else do this story, just for those our listeners who haven't seen it. It's 60 minutes. It's a true story. It's based on a true story. About a 60 minutes investigation.
And the downfall of Dan Rather, one of the great icons of American journalism.
American journalism and television, who was then the chief reporter on 60 Minutes, was a much respected newsreader and basically could get anything made he wanted made. And it's about his producer, who had an extraordinarily well-credentialed career in her own right and was considered to be one of the A-teams of investigative journalism on American television. And she comes into possession about information concerning the Iraq War. And so it all is all about...
Particularly the service of George W. Bush.
Yes, and it's very critical of George W. Bush and whether he tried to avoid the draft in the Vietnam War, and then later what all the players and who knew about that, who didn't know about that, and then what would they actually tell the American public, which would have undermined his own credibility in terms of sending young men off, young men and women off to die in the Iraq War. So it's an immensely powerful show. But as you said, it has a go then at the media world and to what degree you can go to press before you have every fact. When very powerful institutions line up against you, and when you know it to be true but you can't prove it to be true beyond a reasonable doubt, to what degree have you got ethical responsibilities? And of course, they did go to air with the story when they were certain that was true, but they couldn't actually prove it in the subsequent, or not prove it at least to the networks.
In an evidentiary sense.
In an evidentiary sense. It's subsequently been proved to be reasonably true. There were other players who've come out subsequently, but everyone, Dan Rather, had to resign. Kate Blanchett's character, whose name I just forget, has to, she resigns, she's sacked actually, and there's a litany of incredible debris around this story. And subsequently, of course, we now know that in fact, there were an extraordinary number of deals done in regard to the then President Bush, the President Bush in his previous national service, and how he was looked after, if you like.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you my friend, Dan Rather.
I'm the producer. I put the team together.
We have
Lucy Scott to run point. Colonel Roger Charles worked Abu Ghraib for us.
Mike Smith,
who was a researcher for us back in 2000.
What's our next move?
I might have something for the election.
The President of the United States may have gone AWOL from the military.
He never even showed up.
Those parts of his file they didn't like, they tossed in a wastebasket.
Do you have these documents?
These really are the holy grail of documents.
You've got 3 hours.
We're out of time.
Start outfitting.
Go!
Go, 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 go!
Tonight, we have new information on the President's military service.
Here's to a great story.
Both films, Oscar material in both of them?
I think so. I'm surprised that Truth hasn't got there more. I think, interestingly, Spotlight's in the Oscars, but they went for Best Film, but they didn't give it acting accolades. Truth doesn't even figure very much at all, if at all, I think, in the Oscar ceremonies. My hunch is that this is a very uncomfortable moment for the American public because it's having a go at two of the great institutions of that country. One is the church. It's very hard for Australians who have never lived in the United States to understand the power of religion in that country, but it's an immensely powerful institution. And to this day, Americans are, like, still about 30 to 32% of all US Christians go to church once a month or more. In Australia, it's down to about 9 or 8%. So, and then the other one is the media, which, of course, it's the country built on the media that builds the media. So these are powerful institutions these films are attacking. And the American public, I think, find it very uncomfortable indeed.
Yeah, and the salutary lesson many in the media are drawing out of this is the importance of long-term investigative capacity, which is being lost in the fracturing of media as we go into this.
And I think, actually, this is a serious issue we've all got to be interested in, because once you have a go at all your public institutions, from the army to the parliament, or the Congress, to the media, and to the free press, to religion, even if you don't like religion, it's a very, all of these can be great forces for good. And when you have a go at the police, like when every single public institution is held up for ridicule, that doesn't mean it shouldn't be held up for scrutiny, but it's dismissed with ridicule, then actually I think a society then is on rather dicey ground. I want to have confidence in our institutions. I also want to investigate where they have been criminal, where they have been dysfunctional, and where obviously there's good cause for it to be even better.
Speaking of ridicule, The Big Short.
Oh, The Big Short. Here's another institution we're having a go at. And that's the business community, and particularly Wall Street, comes in for a pasting in this film.
You know what? I'm pissed off.
American people.
We're getting screwed by the big banks.
And I am getting madder and madder.
It's unbelievable.
Then this guy walks into my office and says,
there's some shady stuff going down.
Give them kids a raining.
All the banks were having a big old party. A few outsiders saw it when no one else could.
The whole world economy might collapse.
I'm sure the world's banks have more incentives than greed.
You're wrong.
No one's paying attention.
The banks got greedy, and we can profit off of their stupidity.
You want to bet against the banks?
I think we're either high or having a stroke. Kind of brilliant.
Fraud has never, ever worked. Eventually, things go south. When the hell did we forget all that?
It's been criticised by some of not having a moral centre. That is, of making fun and light of, but not really exposing how much damage these people are responsible for.
Yes, I think there is a moral voice in the film. The problem is that the players who end up exposing the immorality of the institution they're criticising are benefiting from it at almost exactly the same time. Christian Bale's character might be the only one that seemed to have walked away, and while he made a lot of money for other people, it would appear he didn't actually go after it himself. Just to fill our listeners in, this is about trying to explain to laymen and women like me and others how the global financial crisis actually occurred, why it occurred, and did anybody predict it? I've got to say that I've always been suspicious of economists because, you know, they tend to be like oracles for Delphi. They seem to know everything about everything after it occurs. And it's extraordinary to me that we put a lot of faith in these people, and they have an enormous amount of clout. Like, they are like prophetic figures. They're like biblical prophets telling us what's going to happen. And I've always thought that the way to work out who's worth listening to is, do they have strong records of telling us a year before the global financial crisis that it was going to happen and when it was going to happen? Well, here are four people who actually are interconnected with each other, who actually started to predict it well ahead of the game. One of them, the Christian Bale character, is in fact 2 years out. He's saying this is just going to happen. It's going to rock the financial institutions. Banks will fail. People will lose their homes. And it did. What is absolutely devastating in this film, which it angers me to this day, as much as, by the way, that clergy don't go to jail anger me too, and bishops and others who have covered up the crime, so I'm not letting the church off the hook there, is that at the end of the film, it tells us how many people actually went to jail for the global financial crisis, which saw hundreds or tens of millions of people in the United States and elsewhere in the world lose their homes and be left to an old age of penury. It was one person, they claim at the end of the film, actually went to jail for their hand in the demise of banks and lending agencies who end up in wreaking havoc on poor people. So you walk out of this film pretty angry as well, I'd have to say.
We've got another film that we've just got time to talk about that deals at its heart with anger, The Revenant.
The Revenant. Now, this will divide the crowd. It's long, it's slow, it's deliberate. I have a friend of mine in Brisbane who went to see it after I told him to go to at a dinner party I was at. I said, oh, you'll love it, it's great. And he sent me an email saying he thought it was the longest, most boring, most tedious film he'd seen in an awfully long time. Said it was self-indulgent. I didn't think so at all. Go to a matinee, certainly don't do it late at night. It's almost 2.5 hours long. I think it's just over 2.5 hours long. It is slow and it is deliberate, but it is violent. But it's a very interesting film about revenge, or at least that's the way it presents. But it's about so much more than that. Leonardo DiCaprio, you heard it here first, will win the Oscar for this performance. Oscar hasn't liked Leonardo up till now. They've often had him in the running, or everyone thought he would have got nominated and he's been bypassed. He should have won an Oscar for What's Eating Gilbert Grape years ago when he was a boy, and he deserves it now. This is a striking and wonderful performance. I found the whole film arresting, but it is about revenge. And I think in Pope Francis's Year of Mercy, it's rather a contrast. He goes after a man who has killed his only son and sets about firstly trying to get his revenge on that man. Fitzgerald is the name of Tom Hardy is the actor who plays this character called Fitzgerald. And it's set in the 19th century in the frontier. And it's all about bear attacks and Indian attacks and trying to survive against nature when there's snow and there's ice and there's sleet and there's rain and there's no food. And so it's an extraordinary tale of survival against the elements as well.
The power of purpose, but what sort of purpose?
Yes, except the Revenant, in fact, doesn't mean revenge. It's actually a concept in Latin it's all about, and in the French language it's about where it was deployed most, was about dead spirits. It's about ghosts coming back to haunt those who are living. And in fact, that's an interesting idea to play with, that whether the Leonardo DiCaprio character is in fact, in a sense, has died and he's come back to get his revenge. Now, it's not physically true in the film, but there is a sense in which he's a hollow man, that once his son is killed and once he's left for dead but survives against all the odds, then in fact he's a shell of a human being. He doesn't care about his own life. In a way, I assume a ghost or a spirit doesn't care because they've got nothing left to live for. They're dead, they're gone, so they're back to haunt those who have done terrible things to them or to those they love. So that's actually quite an adept, or like whether you buy ghosts and spirits, it's within its own terms, it's a very adept and quite sophisticated idea. It's a boys' own film. Women are only decorative in this film, and then fairly minor characters, obviously. But we get the bear attack, which is the big thing people are focusing on, and it's violent. You know, like it's done with CGI, but you can't tell where the CGI starts and stops. This is, Spanish director. Iarnatu is a brilliant at these CGI effects, and this, there's no question that this is one of his best outings, I think.
Only safe thing to do is track a new course back up online.
Then what we gonna do? Sit out there like a bunch of goddamn ducks?
You and your half-breed son get to walk on out?
I'm talking to you.
Before you go, you're not going to be with us for a few weeks. You're off and away doing other things.
I've been asked to go and lecture in the United States and in Canada.
You've got a new book out called What Are We Hoping For?, which is about Lent and Easter and what their meaning is, which we'll have a look at and maybe have a chance to talk about at some stage soon.
But, I look forward to it, John.
What are we hoping for in terms of the Oscars? Give us your best three.
I think The Revenant will probably do well. I think Mad Max is a terrific film, but I couldn't imagine it beating it. I quite like Fury Road. It's, again, another vengeance and violent film. Leonardo will certainly get up. The other acting ones, I think, are up for grabs. So I'm going to be in the USA on Oscar night. So I doubt I'm going to be in the auditorium, but I might find myself, because all over Los Angeles, having lived there when I was studying at UCLA, all over Los Angeles you have Oscar parties. So I'm going to discover someone who doesn't know it yet, but they're going to have me as a guest.
Richard Lenn, we wait in anticipation. Thank you so much for joining us once again on Sunday.
Thanks, John.
Night.